Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What are we starting with this week?
Oh, for goodness sake.
Without interrupting me,
time.
What are we starting with
we review.
This? Without interrupting me, what are we starting with?
A wee review.
A nice wee review.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, yes, you're right, champ.
Thank you.
So, this one says, favorite podcast, 5 stars. Amazing podcast, really interesting and funny. If you want a fun game, take a shot every time Corey says effectively. Now, look, listen to me. Everyone watching, I need you to know that I say effectively for a good reason. Effectively, basically, all of those words are because scientists can't say anything. I'd be 100% sure. There's always this tiny little percentage.
Because if you say something with like 100% certainty, and then someone goes, well, not all the time.
Yeah.
Like, makes you look like an idiot.
Exactly. If I say pigs cannot fly, categorically pigs cannot fly, do you know what they're going to find out about tomorrow? A flying pig.
Just the one.
It's going to happen. I promise you. Okay? It's going to happen. So that's why you can play that game. Shall we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Well, hello there.
This week, we're talking about a dick and a flu.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it someone called Richard?
Yeah, it is.
Ah. Has it got something to do with the flu?
It does have something to do with the flu.
Okay, so, I decoded that on Sherlock Holmes.
Well done. I'm very proud of you. So,
thank you.
So we're talking about the Spanish flu a little bit today. I say we're talking about the Spanish flu. This is not the Spanish flu episode. There will be a Spanish flu episode, but that is not this one. This one is about a man named Richard E. Shope, Richard Ellis Shope, who discovered something very interesting about the flu. But we'll get to that in a bit. What do you guys know about the Spanish flu?
It was about 100 years ago, and it killed a lot of people.
Yep. It's basically, okay, right. Everyone listening.
And it didn't start in Spain. I know that.
That's true. Yeah, it didn't start in Spain. So everyone listening and watching, just picture your you know, your life today. Now, take away all of the technology that you've got, you know. Once you've done that, just imagine that you've just come out of a big world war, okay?
The first?
That is, yeah, the first.
Yeah.
That is exactly what was happening in 1918. That was the Spanish flu.
So it was just like the pandemic we're going through right now.
Yeah.
But take away all the fun stuff about it.
Yeah. Not the fun stuff of it. There's nothing. Well, actually.
As in like the coping mechanism, like the Netflix, the distractions.
The chill, yeah.
The chill, yeah.
Yeah, no Netflix, no chill.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, that was a big issue back then, the Spanish flu. And it's much the same as, what?
What was? Sorry, I took the technology away and I couldn't hear you for about a minute.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying that the Spanish flu was a big pandemic that happened about 100 years ago. And you know, we say it, I'm saying it's as bad as today, but actually it was, it seems it was quite a bit worse. But let's talk a little bit about what the flu is. What is the flu?
A virus. A
virus, yeah.
Yeah.
Influenza.
That's right, right. So the influenza virus, or the flu, it's a virus that attacks your respiratory system, which is what?
Your lungs and all to everything to do with breathing.
Yeah,
and
the
air.
Breathing stuff, that's right. So it's very contagious. If an infected person coughs or sneezes or talks, all the little droplets from your breath, from your lungs, will just come out and go into the air.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm sure this is all sounding very familiar to everyone. and then if someone else inhales it, then they got the flu. Not necessarily, but you know, they've got a chance of getting the flu. And this isn't the Spanish flu, by the way. I'm talking broadly about the flu because there are lots of different flu viruses. As you are probably aware, there are many, many, many flu viruses.
That's why we have to get jabbed every year, right?
Exactly, because they're highly variable. They change a lot. It's like a constant arms race, us against the flu. So some flu symptoms, if you guys haven't already had them, and if you haven't, very lucky you, they can come on very quickly. You get a sudden high temperature of 38 degrees or above. 30 degrees Celsius, by the way. Fahrenheit, right. You'd be dead.
Frozen to death, hypothermia, right?
Wait, no, hold on. Where's the point where Fahrenheit and Celsius meet?
Yes, they meet at 40.
Okay.
Ooh.
Well, yeah. So I don't think you'd be too dead at 38 degrees Fahrenheit. Anyway, that's not the point.
Hang
so
on. You got... Is, no. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Negative 40.
Oh.
Negative 40.
So you would be very dead at 38 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know because I don't use it. So you've got a temperature of 30 degrees C or above, an aching body, feeling tired or exhausted, much like listening to this podcast, a dry cough, sore throat, headache, difficulty sleeping, loss of appetite, diarrhea or tummy pain, feeling sick and being sick. And then children also get the same symptoms, but they can also apparently get a pain in the ear and just be a bit less, you know, active, you know, just lethargic.
Pain in the ear. I used to get that a bit.
Maybe you had the flu. Maybe. Well, kids get ear infections a lot, actually.
Actually, it was probably an ear infection.
I'll have to look into that.
I also had a pole. Apparently, they're really common when you have a pole.
Yeah, if you've got a pole, you just get all that sitting in there. So, how does the flu work? It's, as I said, a respiratory illness. It's caused by the influenza virus. And it's not the same as a cold. It's got similar symptoms, but it's not the same thing as a cold. Although some people might think that. Both are caused by viruses, though. But the cold is caused by a lot of different kinds of viruses than the flu. And it's also a lot milder. It's unlikely that you're going to die from a cold, but people die from the flu. In fact, the flu kills a lot of people every year. Like, it's very, very many. I think like thousands in America per year. Tens of thousands.
That sounded like a Donald Trump speech. The flu kills very many, many people.
It kills the most amount of people, actually.
Many people. Thousands, in fact, in America. The only place that exists. Many dead die.
But it doesn't kill as many people as the radical left.
Antifa kills more than the flu.
Black Lives Matter.
The flu, as I said, can be quite deadly if you're susceptible to it, which most people are not. Although it's a good idea to get a flu vaccination. Actually, this is something I've seen recently. People being like, the only time I got the flu is when I got the flu vaccine.
There can be
complications to getting the flu vaccine. Just because you got the flu when you got the flu vaccine doesn't mean that everyone gets the flu when you get the flu vaccine. Otherwise, we wouldn't be giving people the flu vaccine because they'd be getting the flu. Bear in mind, when you get a vaccine, it's either a milder... We went over this in our vaccines episode, which was last year at this point.
Yeah.
You know, when you get the vaccine, it could be a weakened form. It could be a dead thing. But sometimes it can still cause a sort of mild form of the illness. So...
And aren't a lot of the vaccines like 50% effective a lot of the time?
I don't know necessarily about that. Okay. But yeah, no, I think that ultimately, if you get the flu after getting a flu vaccine, that does not mean you should stop getting the flu vaccine because it's still quite effective.
Yeah.
So, like I said, colds are less likely to be, you know, quite serious. But when the flu gets into your body, basically, we've spoken about how viruses work before. You guys know how viruses work. Why don't you guys tell me how viruses work?
Oh, yeah, I would love to. Luke?
The virus goes into your body and then it finds whatever cell it wants to attack and it injects a little bit of DNA into that cell, which causes the cell to make more copies of that virus, and then that cell explodes and all those viruses go off and do the same thing to loads of other cells.
I'm so glad I'm on the same
quite
page
mean.
It's not that mean, it's just nature, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it mean for a lion to eat a gazelle?
It's pretty
is
mean.
It mean for a gazelle to eat a blade of grass? Is it mean for a blade of grass to grow?
Yes.
To eat the sun. Yum, yum.
But they literally are eating. I mean, the sun is going to die anyway, but they are literally eating the sun. It's like if you had little parasites that ate your... Oh, they do.
If you run time backwards, the grass is making the sun. So have you ever considered that? Thank you, grass, for the glorious sun.
The grass is making part of the sun.
Yes,
a very
flowers,
small part.
And the flowers making the rest. That's so
lovely, Corey.
No,
the grass
Thank
is making
you.
A very small part of the sun. Like a minuscule part.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, if you think about it, actually, we do also have little tiny things eating our dead skin. So they're basically like, they're grass and we are the sun to them. Anyway. And if you turn time backwards, those little dust mites, they're making you.
They're making us. Oh, that's so kind.
Little dust mite daddy.
They're making us so that we can grow ever smaller and then shoot back inside our mothers. Lovely.
Who they also made.
What a weird family tree.
It's more like family roots, isn't it? It's like... So that's basically how viruses work. When the flu virus
not that whole thing that's how viruses work.
Honestly, there are points where I remember the comments that we get that are like, you guys don't talk about enough science, you know? And I'm like, yeah, we don't talk about enough science. If you've
That's
come
why
here,
we're in the comedy section on Spotify.
That is why we're in the comedy section on Spotify. 84th. The top 84. Yeah. That's incredible. Well done, everyone listening, for doing that. Not everyone listening, actually. Just the ones listening on Spotify. Everyone else.
And where would we be if we talked about more science?
Yeah.
Not 84th.
No, we would. Well, actually, we don't know. We'd have to do a test.
The education category. That's where we'd be.
Probably be like third.
The funniest education podcast on the planet. So, back to the science for once. So, when the influenza virus gets into your body, for how long, really? we'll see. Here's another drinking game, by the way, if you listen to the opening stinger. Drink every single time we go off topic. Just take a shot. But also, make sure you're, you know, at a hospital, because you will need to be, will have to pump your stomach.
You also need an entire bottle of whatever spirit you choose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just for the first 30 minutes.
Yes.
I like how you said back to the science, and I successfully derailed that plan within about 5 seconds.
Take another shot.
So, actually, back to the science. When the flu virus gets into the body, it goes to the respiratory tract. And once it's there, like Luke says, it finds the cells. It just shoots its genetic information, the RNA, into the cells. And then the cells make, you know, they basically make the virus, which then bursts out. And it just moves to other cells in your lungs and your respiratory tract. And just keeps on doing that. And that's why you get really ill. Well, I say that's why you get really ill. You also get, like, some of the symptoms are your body trying to fight it. Mm. Because your respiratory tissues, that's such a hard thing to say. Why don't we all try and say it once?
Your respiratory tissues.
To the person that is captioning this.
Your respiratory tissues.
I feel sorry for all the, like, for one, the people that listen to this thinking, oh man, I'm going to get a good science podcast. Two, for the people that, like, for the people that caption this, that have to, like, just type us saying random
another
crap.
Shot.
We're going to get an angry email.
So, the respiratory tissues swell up and get inflamed, and the virus starts to try to move into the bloodstream, and that's when you start to get symptoms. And then that continues. The virus continues to replicate for a bit. And then usually the body's immune system will start to fight off the virus, or you'll die. Those are your two options. Either you fight it or you die. I'm thinking there could be some third option that I'm not yet aware of.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of is it, isn't it? Because do we have any treatments? Do we have antiviral drugs?
Yeah, we've got antivirals, but yeah. I don't know if we've got them for the flu.
Right.
Off the top of my head. Someone is going to be like, actually, you should know that we've got the antivirals for it. No, I was looking at the NHS.
We could say essentially, there are two options.
Yeah, yeah. Essentially.
Essentially.
Yeah. The real word I should be saying is the other one, but I'm not going to say that. no, the NHS do recommend for the flu.
Actually, there are 4 FDA-approved antiviral drugs for the flu this season.
Good for them. But you'll probably not get those unless you're, you know, on the dying end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the NHS generally just suggests for most people that have got the flu, just stay in bed and drink lots of water. Try not to be dead. That's the one piece of advice you always get from the NHS. Try not to be dead. So
it's the aim, isn't it? Most of the time.
They should just change it to the NDS, not dead service. So... Yeah, and obviously, when you've got the flu, you could die of other things. You could die of pneumonia or other things that other complications that the flu can bring on. Because bear in mind, your immune system is going to be quite low because you're fighting off this virus. So you could be infected by something else that then causes you to kick the bucket. And bear in mind that this is just generally sort of general flu. This is sort of seasonal flu. I'm not talking here about Spanish flu, swine flu, bird flu. Whatever flu you want to talk about, this is just seasonal flu that happens sort of every year. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a basis for how the flu works.
Yes.
You feel you can understand it?
Yeah.
Look, when you nod, they can't hear you.
Yes.
Oh
You happy?
Almost 2
Unless
years.
Unless it's some very aggressive nodding. I don't think they'll hear it.
Did you hear that?
Time will only tell.
The Spanish flu. Why is it called the Spanish flu?
Didn't America just want to blame it on Spain?
No, maybe.
America would never want to blame it on anyone.
No, no. I mean, you don't see America blaming the China virus on anyone, do you?
No. That would be preposterous.
I couldn't get through that. If you call it the China virus, stop watching. We don't need you. It's called Spanish flu, and this is from history.com, so I don't know how biased this source is. I don't know how much they, I was going to say whitewash, but I guess the Spanish are white, how much they whatever wash history. So Spain was one of the earliest countries where it was kind of identified, but then also some historians think that it could be because they just didn't have as much censorship in Spain, because if you want a little bit of history, because this is the History Boys, the History Guys, not the History Boys, that's a film. This is the History Guys now. In World War I, Spain were neutral. They didn't want to fight. So they didn't have as much censorship in the media, because obviously if you're in a war, you don't want the newspapers being like, this is happening, that is happening, because your enemies can use that information to take you down. So the Spanish newspapers clearly were reporting on it more than other places. And then it could be that other places were having it. Other places were having it before Spain, but it just wasn't reported quite as well. And also, back in the early 1900s, which is when this was happening, by the way, like 1918 sort of time, reporting wasn't very good. Like, medical reporting was just, like, bad. They didn't keep good records. They just weren't very good at it. So we don't have a huge, we've got, like, you know, a fair amount of records, but we don't think we've got complete records on it. Essentially, what happened here is Spain was one of the first places to report it, and most other people were probably keeping it close to their chest. And so it kind of got called the Spanish flu, and then it just stuck, even though there's not a lot of evidence to suggest that it started in Spain.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we know
bit
where
it's
an
it own
started?
Goal for Spain, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
What do you mean, a bit of an own goal? They didn't do anything wrong.
No, of course. I understand that. I just mean, I had always, like, sort of labored under the illusion that basically the Spanish flu was called the Spanish flu because someone wanted to blame it on Spain, or it was like misdirection, or I don't know, something like that. Whereas actually, the Spanish flu being called the Spanish flu was because Spain reported on the Spanish flu.
They were
and other places didn't.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so interesting. It's not, there's no like, countries fighting or blaming each other or scapegoating or anything like that. It's just, yeah.
It's literally because they were the most honest.
Well, no, it kind of
being
is.
Honest.
It kind of is countries blaming each other, because all the other countries that might have known about it that were like let's say America had, like, you know, knew about the Spanish flu. They were like, oh man, shit, we got this flu. We got this big old flu happening. We don't know what's going on. Oh, Spain just said they've got a flu. Spanish flu. Ha ha ha. Spanish. It's like the gay kid in school, right? That's in the closet, that bullies the gay kid that is out of the closet in school. That's exactly what's going on here. Yeah.
I love that Netflix trip.
Is it always
but America and Spain didn't get together in the end, unfortunately.
Yeah.
As it should happen in Netflix shows. Yeah, look.
Is it also something potentially to do with the fact that there wasn't sort of, other than in national newspapers, there wasn't so much kind of there's no internet. There's no like scientists, like a way that scientists or doctors across an entire country can communicate. And so like, if you're just reading in the newspaper that, oh, Spain's got a big flu, or that you're reading in a Spanish newspaper, like a national newspaper, we've got this flu. And you're kind of seeing the flu, but your national newspapers aren't talking about it. As a doctor, you might conclude, oh, that came from Spain.
Yeah.
Like, because I think we can never understand what it must have been like to live in a country where the only centralization of information came through like government organizations military
yeah.
or like that kind of thing. Whereas we now just tweet something and anyone from anywhere else
can
see it.
Yeah. And that's really interesting what you say, because that is what the internet was kind of initially conceived as, a way for sort of professionals and scientists to share information. And now it's become a place where we do this podcast and make memes. But it still serves that initial purpose. And yeah, I think it is interesting how similar the pandemic then is to the pandemic now, but also the fact that they had much, you know, more primitive technology than us. They didn't have any sort of way of communicating in nearly the same way that we do. And I genuinely think that that really affected it. Although I was reading that apparently, I might actually have this in my notes, but I was reading that it could have been, the virus could have actually started with Chinese immigrants and workers. I say workers, I don't know how free they were. Not so hot on my history, but it doesn't seem very good because they were, I think they were moving from Canada and around and then to like somewhere in Europe. And they initially, I think there were reports of these Chinese workers initially having a virus or not having a virus, initially having sort of symptoms of the virus and then sort of moving around. And then I think it was the Canadians that were like, oh, well, it's just the lazy Chinese, isn't it? Those lazy Chinese workers, that racist trope that we have now. So I think like the sort of symptoms of the flu that they had were just being written off as, oh, it's just those lazy Chinese workers. Ha 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 ha. And that was ignored. And I think they then went to Spain and spread it around Spain. So I think actually it may have originated either in China or with these Chinese workers that then spread it around into different places. But it was ignored because racism.
Yes.
God, gotta love it, don't you? Racism, making the world a much worse place.
Always gets you when you most expect it.
Unless you're white, in which case, when you least expect it.
Never.
And never. racism? What? I thought that was over when Rosa Parks sat on a bus.
And it wasn't.
You know, okay.
Brush on my history.
You guys like to hear a fact that will destroy your worldview forever. In fact, yes, anyone listening to this podcast, I give you the absolute sort of permission to stop listening from this point onwards and just take some time to yourself. Rosa Parks could have seen the first Shrek movie.
What?
Was she alive? She was alive.
Rosa Parks. There is no evidence to suggest that Rosa Parks could not have seen the first. I think even two Shrek movies.
That's incredible. It also gives you a real span of understanding of when racism was still like when that part of history was happening.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
The first two Shrek movies, Shrek 1 and Shrek 2.
What?
And do you know the beautiful
thing? I hope she did. She deserves to see them.
Exactly. And the beautiful, they deserve to be seen by Rosa Parks, I think.
Especially Shrek 2.
Honestly, the beautiful part about this is that Rosa Parks did not have to see Shrek 3 and 4. What? No, Shrek 1 and 2 are fantastic movies. Shrek 1, it twists the genre. Shrek 2 builds upon it. The best sequel of all time, one could say. Then Shrek 3, disappointing, but I still like it. And Shrek 4, Don't even call it a Shrek movie. It breaks the formula.
I've forgotten
much.
What it is.
Corey, shall we get back to the science?
Again. You're doing it again.
What?
Not getting back to the science.
Look, this podcast is predominantly. Look, okay, right. I'm going to come clean.
No, don't go into another digression. No. Just get back to the science.
No, I'm going to come clean. This is a really short one. I'm going to come clean, okay? This podcast. The reason that I wanted to start it was not to talk about science. It was actually just to talk about things that I want to talk about. It just turns out that a lot of the time I want to talk about science. That's why we go on so many tangents.
It was all one big lead up to talking about Rosa Parks and Shrek.
Why isn't it just called The Guys?
That's sexist.
The Guys! No, because The Guys describes every podcast that exists ever. Yeah. Pretty much.
Two white guys and that's it. Two white guys and some microphones. Or two white guys that think they're funnier than they are. And Corey!
Oh.
So back to the Spanish flu. As we've said, we don't actually know the exact origins of it. We think that it might have had something to do with China and racism. Mm. But again, I think this is a bit murky. So, you know, don't take my word on it. But let's talk a little bit about the symptoms of the Spanish flu.
Why are you laughing at the symptoms of the Spanish flu, Corey?
That's really uncomfortable.
The symptoms of the Spanish flu. Initial symptoms are, you know, similar to other flu symptoms. Sore head, tiredness. Then you get a dry, hacking cough. Lose your appetite. Ew. Start having problems with your stomach. That's a polite way of saying diarrhea. And then Afterwards, you start sweating excessively, like just a lot. And then after that, it starts hitting your respiratory organs. So your lungs, it's like, oh no, we got pneumonia, bro. And then that's the thing. This is often the main cause of death, pneumonia and other complications. And this is one of the things that people have been talking about with the current pandemic, where they say, actually, have you noticed that even deaths that aren't exactly due to the virus are being labeled as deaths from the virus? That's ridiculous. That's not true. I just want to run you guys through this. When someone dies, they have a little death sheet that they fill. A doctor fills out a little death sheet to say what happened. Mm-hmm. There are like four different... So you've got like... the way it works is basically... This led to this, led to this, led to this.
Yeah.
So you've got like a primary thing and then like what actually literally killed them. Mm-hmm. So like if what actually killed them was like, let's say, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to do this like properly. If what actually killed them was like, oh, their lungs exploded, then you go back through to see why their lungs exploded. Oh, their lungs exploded because they ate dynamite and also a match. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like the exact literal cause of death might have been brought on by other things. So that's why, I think the same happens for some cancer deaths. So if someone dies from cancer, they may not actually die from cancer so much as they could die from pneumonia. But the reason that the pneumonia killed them is because their immune system was lower.
Compromised.
Because of, exactly. So, and that's the thing. If you're immunocompromised, the flu could be very deadly for you, and anyone could be immunocompromised. So, you know, it's like when we talk about the flu sort of killing some people, not killing others, it's people that are immunocompromised or very old or other sort of things like that that are susceptible to that. So that's the sort of symptoms of it, of the Spanish flu. But that was the first wave. So there were two waves. The second wave was... very, very infectious, like very contagious. And people started dying within sort of hours or days of getting symptoms, which is like a proper plague. And their skin would turn blue and their lungs would start filling with fluid and they'd suffocate. And just because of this, within that year, the average life expectancy in America just like dropped by 12 years.
Whoa.
So many people were dying. Yeah.
12 years,
yeah. Which is not good. But yeah, so this is the thing as well. I was thinking about this while I was doing this. People didn't necessarily know exactly what was causing this. Like, they knew about bacteria back then, and I think they knew about viruses as well, but they couldn't figure out what was causing this. And that's where the sort of, what I'm going to talk about later comes in. But can you just imagine sort of like, I think it's really lucky that we live now where the coronavirus happened, and as soon as we sort of knew what was happening, we already knew that it was a virus, a coronavirus, and like we knew so much about it already. Like, we were already like ready from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you go back like about 100 years, 102 years, they spend quite some time trying to figure out exactly what it is. You go back even even farther, you've got all the different plagues and things, where people genuinely just had no idea. Like, people were dropping dead, and people were like, you know, they had people in the sort of plague doctor masks, filled with sort of nice smelling things, having canes so that they didn't have to touch people, because they had no idea what was causing this. They thought it could be bad smells. They thought it could be a lot of different things. So they were just like, when they were coming up with the plague doctor stuff, it was literally made to look scary, to ward off things that I think it might have been spirits or things, because they were like, well, what if it's this, or what if disease is carried by bad smells, all of these different things. They were like, we got to cobble together everything to potentially defend against it. Whereas nowadays we're like, oh, we know what is causing it, and we can very quickly get to the root of the problem. Like, we know that masks help. We knew that basically straight away, and we were able to contain it. Well, if governments did their job properly, we'd be able to contain it very quickly and very well. So those are the symptoms. So I wanted to go through some stats and, like, you know, tell you a little bit about the Spanish flu, because, again, as I said, this is not the full Spanish flu episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little taster about the Spanish flu. Just a little.
A teaser. A sample.
How many people roughly, what rough sort of percentage of the world population do you think died from the Spanish flu?
Percentage?
Yeah,
or a fraction. I'm going to get something ridiculously high. I'm going to say 15%.
15?
Yeah.
Luke? I was going to say about 10.
Oh, man.
Is it higher?
One of you's got to double it, and I want you to decide which one it is.
20.
30.
About one third of the world's population.
What?
Wait, did I say died or infected?
I think you said
died. You said died.
I meant infected.
Okay.
Okay. How that's still died? Quite shocking.
Okay, so let me read through this. So about 50 million worldwide. Over 500,000 of that was in the US. But we think it could be more than 50 million because, like I said, we didn't keep good records back then. So it... I can't believe I said one third of the world died from one third of the world were infected by that.
I was like,
I've definitely seen graphs of world population over time, and none of them suddenly dropped by a third.
Do you know,
not even in the wars.
What's really funny is that, like, do you ever like say things and you say one thing and just completely think you've said another?
Yes.
Like, I did not register that that's what I'd said. Yeah, so it one third of the world, we think, got the virus, and I think maybe about 3% of the world we think died, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah, and it could be more because, again, they weren't counting them properly. Now, mortality was really high in people that were younger than 5, and also from 20 to 40 years old. That's us, and also 65 years and older. So if you're 6 to 19 or 41 to 64, you're good. You guys are great. Everyone else?
Oh,
no.
Dear.
No.
Off you go.
Good Lord. and this is the thing. There was a really high mortality in people that were healthy, which is worrying because, you know, if all the sort of people who are already healthy are getting very, very ill, and then also the people who are already not very healthy are getting ill, but not necessarily having a huge mortality rate. You've got hospitals being completely overrun. Mm-hmm. So apparently more soldiers, American soldiers, died from the flu than were killed in the war.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, right? It's a lot. It's a lot of people. Bear in mind, this is World War I, and like quite so many people died in World War I.
Yeah.
Apparently 40% of the Navy was hit. Got the flu, the US Navy, and apparently 36% of the army got it as well. And obviously they were moving around the world in like very crowded conditions. So they were perfect little incubation bags for the flu. Like I said, people say that it's roughly like 20 to 50 million potentially people died. But some estimates go as high as 100 million. Yeah, because we just don't know. but there also, another awful thing about this, is that there weren't very many places that were immune to it. Pretty much everywhere got hit by this Spanish flu. Like, it was a global pandemic. And I say global pandemic because some people may not know this. Pandemic generally means either it's a sort of global epidemic, but it could also mean an epidemic of a specific country. So when you hear people say global pandemic, that's why.
Interesting. Because when this pandemic started happening and I was saying online, like, global pandemic, I just had this one comment that was just like, if anyone says global pandemic when pandemic means global, I'm going to scream. And then ever since then, I've really noticed people say global pandemic. Even Boris Johnson, our prime minister, says global pandemic. And I was every time I was like, oh, that person's going to be screaming now.
If you Google pandemic, one of the top definitions there is either global epidemic or an epidemic affecting an entire country.
Yeah, it says a whole country or the world.
Yeah. So when people say global pandemic, they're not saying ATM machine. They are just specifying that it is a pandemic that is affecting the entire world, not one that's just affecting a country.
Interesting.
Thank you.
So, that's what I was saying. It hit the entire world. Apparently, the president of the United States got it. You can tell, I feel like this, where I was getting my notes from was written by Americans, because of course they're going to be like, our president, Woodrow Wilson, he got it. Like, wow, the president of the United States, he got it, which means it was really bad.
He recovered in 3 days. Miracle.
Remember
best
we all
genes
thought that,
I've ever seen in my life.
Remember when we all thought that, the virus was going to assassinate the president? Do you guys remember that?
Twice it happened. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was like, he looked a little bit weak in some of his video conferences. And then he actually got it. And both times people were like, well, he's not looking too good.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that even though you're like a 70-year-old man, having a lot of money means you just don't need to die from things that are killing everyone else. Good Lord. So, you know, we didn't really know what was happening with the Spanish flu. Bear in mind, actually, at the time, they didn't know that it was a virus that was causing it. Mm. They didn't know what exactly was causing it. It was called the Spanish flu, but they were looking for bacteria and things because at this point, you know, the flu. I think the flu was just referring to the whole sort of thing. They didn't know that it was caused by viruses. And they didn't have a vaccine to protect against it. They couldn't use antibiotics because it is a virus and it's not affected by antibiotics. Penicillin wasn't even invented yet.
Penicillin wouldn't do anything. Oh, but it wouldn't do anything against a virus.
No, but it would do if you've got bacterial infections, coming because you've got a lowered immune system because of the virus. When was penicillin invented? We did an episode on it. Which episode is that?
1928.
So it was a good 10 years off of any antibiotics existing. Yeah, the world was not in a very good place to deal with this. And yeah, the way they dealt with it was going to be pretty familiar. It was social isolation, quarantine, good hygiene, and disinfectants, no public gatherings, and masks. But obviously it wasn't applied the same across the world. I feel like I'm just talking about the current day right now. I'm not even joking. Reading about all this, I'm just like, oh my. Been 100 years. Why are we not doing
still relevant?
Yeah, why are we not doing better? We didn't know what was going on at the time. 1918, they didn't know. And this is the sort of key point to this story, is that even after the pandemic had ended, they still didn't know exactly what had caused it. They couldn't figure it out. So I'll tell you a little bit about who, you know, figured that one out. His name was Richard E. Shope. He was born in 1901, died in 1966. He did a fair amount in his life. He got an MD from the University of Iowa in Iowa City. That was in 1924. And then he joined the Rockefeller Laboratory under Paul Lewis. And that was at Princeton in New Jersey. And he then became the head of his own laboratory in 1929. And then he sort of he briefly went elsewhere, but then he came back to the Rockefeller and stayed there for the rest of his career. He also worked for the army during World War II to make a vaccine against a disease that was affecting like cows. And he got a lot of awards throughout his life. And apparently he was elected to the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. So, to tell you what Shope did, first I need to tell you about a man named Richard Pfeiffer, who was from Germany. He was a scientist, he studied bacteria, and he found what caused the flu. He found the bacterium that caused the flu. He found that strain of bacteria that caused it. Although, you might be a little bit confused, because he didn't actually...
I am.
Yeah, he didn't actually find the bacteria that caused it.
It's not caused by bacteria.
It's not. So as you can probably tell, Pfeiffer had made a little bit of a boo-boo. But it makes sense. If you follow the story through, it makes sense. He found this rod-shaped bacteria, and he got it from the noses of people that were infected with the flu. And he called it Bacillus influenzae. Or Pfeiffer's bacillus. Bacillus, I think that means rod-shaped. Oh my God. Every single time I say something like this, I think, what if a lecturer from my university listens to this and says, man, you should really, you should know this.
It does mean that. I've checked.
Thanks. I'm pretty sure bacillus refers to the rod shape.
Yeah, rod-shaped bacterium.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good. I know this. I just don't feel confident in myself.
Well done.
So, Bacillus influenzae, rod-shaped influenza, basically. So he thought I found this, great, I did it. I got it from the nose of people that were infected. How could it be anything else? And a lot of people were like, yeah, You found it. Good job, my friend. Well done. Little round of applause for you. But, but they were not correct. They thought they were because they, at that point, they knew that bacteria caused diseases. They knew that it caused cholera and the plague and other things. But, it just was not the case. Obviously, we know now. And the thing is that it really seemed to be the case because a lot of people and a lot of patients, you were able to find the bacteria. But the key point is that you couldn't find it in all of them.
Right.
So, some people were kind of being like, I don't think this is the case. You can't find it in everyone, so maybe it's not correct, you know? Maybe we should try and look for something else. So there was this man named Peter Olitsky, and he worked with someone called Frederick Gates. They were both at the Rockefeller Institute. Mm-hmm. They basically took nasal secretions, mucus, snot, from patients that were infected with that 1918 flu, and they passed them through filters, very, very fine filters, which get rid of bacteria. Now, they basically once they'd filtered that out, they were able to give rabbits lung disease with with what they filtered.
They gave rabbits lung disease filtered snot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
Yeah, but like,
hey, I've filtered this snot and I'm able to give rabbits lung disease. Congratulations. Right,
okay, no, I feel like I feel like you guys are taking this as though, well, we filtered the snot. What do we do with it now? Shall we chuck it? Well, I got some rabbits here. Do you want to see if we can get... No.
Let's see what it does.
That was the entire point of filtering it, to see if it was still infectious after it was filtered. Because think about it this way. If you filter out the bacteria and there's no bacteria in it and it's still infectious, then the bacteria can't be what's infecting people. No, right?
I did get that. I was just teasing you.
No, I know you got that, but some people may not, and that's A-okay.
But they did, in fact, get lung disease.
No, the rabbits did.
And then they filtered rabbits, and they were able to give people influenza. Incredible.
How does one...
You filter all the rabbit out, you just got the influenza left.
I mean, what, you're just putting rabbits in a vat of water and like...
In a rabbit filter.
It filters out the rabbit and just left with the filtered snot.
That is a net. What you're talking about is a net.
Yeah, and the rabbit sneezed through the net. No. And there's somebody on the other side breathing in and then they get influenza.
I don't even know if rabbits can sneeze.
Oh, they can sneeze.
Can they?
Yeah.
Do you know that for a fact? Or
I had rabbits, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Effectively, rabbits sneeze.
I did not know that you knew that. I did not know that you had rabbits. I just thought you would be like, of course, rabbits can sneeze. Like, why would they not be able to sneeze?
No, they can sneeze.
Okay. So they'd filtered out the snot. They'd filtered the snot. They'd given the filtered snot to rabbits. The rabbits then got lung disease. So they had isolated the influenza virus, but they didn't know. That they had, they didn't know that's what they found. Mm-hmm. They were actually calling it an atypical bacterium, Bacterium pneumocystis. But other researchers could not reproduce the results, which is a big sort of red flag in the science world. If you do something and you say, I found this thing, and then someone else tries to do it and they say, I cannot do the same thing, then you've not really found something. Well, not that you've not really found something. You've not necessarily found something. The big, big, big thing about science is it needs to be repeatable and reliable. Mm-hmm. If you make a discovery, you need to be damn sure that other people can make discoveries, which is why you've got to post, you've got to give your sort of full method so everyone knows exactly how you did it.
Yep.
And someone can be like, I will follow those same methods and try and get the same results. So they, Olitsky and Gates, they did this in 1918. But Richard Shope, 10 years later,
Ooh.
10 years later, he was working at the Rockefeller Institute. That's so hard to say. Rockefeller Institute, the same place that the two men previously were working. And he started looking at swine influenza because pig farmers in Iowa had a couple outbreaks, one in 19 and then another in 1929. And this was like basically a very, very contagious flu that was spreading among their pigs. And what they did was Shope and his mentor, Paul Lewis, they took the mucus and the lung samples from the infected pigs, and they tried to isolate the thing that was causing the disease. They tried to figure out what it was. And they managed to find a bacterium that looked exactly like Pfeiffer's bacterium, mm-hmm. the Bacillus influenzae. When they tried to infect the pigs with that bacteria, they injected it back into healthy pigs. It didn't do anything. Didn't cause any disease. So they were like, okay, this guy, what's his name? Pfeiffer found the bacteria that caused this flu, but we give it to the pigs and it doesn't cause the flu. What's going on? It should be causing
the flu.
You've
got to give it to a rabbit.
No.
Come on. Basic mistake.
Luke, if you talk one more time about having sex with a rabbit, I swear to God you're off the podcast.
What?
It's too many times.
I didn't give it to a rabbit.
The many hours a day that Jap has to spend just cutting around you talking about rabbit sex, it is absurd.
And then I have to do an edit where I just put it on loop for 5 minutes. Just so we have it.
Just so we've got it. And actually, this is the thing. If you don't do that, Luke is threatened to quit.
Yes.
Many times.
He's trapped in this podcast by the threat of all the things we can release. You look so tired. You look so, so tired.
But seriously, when I say you got to give it to a rabbit...
not, that's what I mean not is, the thing is you want to
seriously they... when I say you've got to give it to a rabbit, like you've really got to oh.
What I mean is, why do they assume that giving the bacterium to a pig will have the same effect as these previous people found when giving because it they, to a rabbit?
Because they isolated it from pigs.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I remember they took clearly. It from I mean I was listening, but I clearly didn't hear that bit.
That was
I was too busy looking at this nice picture of a rabbit that I found.
Luke, put the rabbits away.
Doing some online shopping.
Okay, sorry. Bookmark and close.
It's one for the wank bag.
Add to reading list.
So, as I was saying before Luke so rudely interrupted about his weird rabbit fetish, they isolated the bacteria from pigs, but when they tried to reinfect different pigs with the same bacteria that they'd isolated from them, it just I didn't see. Work. It didn't infect those pigs. So, clearly, that bacteria... could not be the cause of the flu. It just plain couldn't. So Shope then filtered the samples, just like Olitsky and Gates did, and he also found that the filtrate had the infectious agent. So once you get rid of the bacteria, there's still something infectious in there. And it caused a really, really contagious influenza-like disease in pigs. It was more mild than the one that was in the naturally infected pigs, though. Mm. And when he mixed what he'd filtered with the bacteria, with the sort of reproduced bacteria, you get the severe disease again. So
right.
So the bacteria on its own doesn't cause anything. The filtered mucus causes a mild form of the disease, but bacteria and mucus together cause a severe form of the disease.
Extra bad.
What do you guys think is happening?
So are you getting the virus from the filtrate, which is making you more susceptible to the bacteria?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. Well, exactly. So... essentially, they found that what Shope concluded was that the filtered agent caused the infection, which then facilitated another infection from the bacteria. So he published that result, those results, in the Journal of Experimental Medicine, and then some British researchers saw that paper and like saw his techniques, and then isolated the virus from humans and. That sort of proved that that's what caused the Spanish flu, the influenza virus. That's how this sort of story worked. It was a man basically working with pigs that found out that the flu virus was a virus. And actually, quite interestingly, you may think that that means that the Spanish flu, the 1918 flu, was a swine flu, as in a flu originating from pigs. Mm. But that is... not the case. It's actually much more interesting than that. So what is actually the case, what actually happened is it was an avian flu. It came from birds and spread to humans and then could have spread to pigs afterwards, is what we think. And this is the thing. We actually proved, or not proved, we have very strong evidence to support the idea that the pandemic virus of 1918 has genes that are from sort of an avian-like flu strain, basically. And the 1918 Spanish flu, the 1918 flu, is the common ancestor of both human and classical sort of swine H1N1 flu viruses. Mm. So this flu virus is basically the sort of the daddy of modern H1N1 flu viruses, which was I think swine flu, the swine flu epidemic way back in the noughties when we thought that was a big deal.
Yeah.
so that would have been a descendant of the Spanish flu then, according to this. But yeah, we took a long time. We took 10 years to figure out that it wasn't bacteria causing it, that it was a virus causing it. But we did it, thanks to this man working with pigs and some other men infecting rabbits with lung disease.
So what was the bacteria then in that situation?
Bacteria.
Because what you would, unless I'm mistaken, what it sounds like you're saying is that the thing that we'd call the Spanish flu, i.e. this really bad thing, this really bad infection that kills people, if the virus just gives you a sort of mild infection and then it's sort of a double whammy with your immune system is compromised by the introduction of the virus, and then that leaves you susceptible to bacterial infection, then you could make an argument that the thing that we call on our level of reality, the Spanish flu, is actually a combined effort between the initial weakening of your system by the virus and then the knock-on effect coming from a bacterial infection.
I mean, that is a very astute observation. Based on the evidence that I've got in front of me and what I was looking into, again, bear in mind, not a Spanish flu episode. I don't know if the virus alone is incredibly weak. I know that in pigs it was a much milder form. In humans that may or may not be the case, but it's definitely exacerbated by that bacterium. But then
do you know what that bacterium is?
We named it earlier. It is Bacillus influenzae.
Is the same one.
Yeah, it's the same, right, one. Okay. Yeah, and this is the thing. It could be that, but then ultimately, bear in mind, people were dying from other complications, so it could be the weakened immune system that's leading to any kind of other infection. But it could be the fact that this is just a hypothesis that the Bacillus influenzae spreads in a similar manner to the flu. So that if someone is infected with the flu and then becomes infected with that bacterium, they can spread them both at the same time, and it's kind of like a perfect storm, kind of as you said. But yeah, I mean that you could be right that the Spanish flu is really a sort of a tag team.
Well, all I mean is that when we are describing the Spanish flu, now you can obviously say you it depends what you're specifying. If when you're saying the Spanish flu you mean that specific virus, then obviously the Spanish flu is that specific virus. But when you say the Spanish flu, i.e. The set of illnesses that swept different countries and caused lots of people to die, then that could, like you say, be a tag team. Remember, it depends what you're specifically talking about.
Do you remember how we were talking about how deaths are listed before? Mm-hmm. That there's the sort of primary cause and then the sort of subsequent causes. In this case, it seems that the influenza virus, sort of 1918 pandemic Spanish flu virus, would be the main cause. And then the bacterial infection that follows, that is facilitated by that viral infection, would be subsequent causes. But the person would not have died from that bacterial infection had they not had the flu.
No,
as well. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things. But although, to be fair, back then as well, it is quite difficult because they weren't necessarily recording all flu deaths as flu deaths.
Yeah,
not because they were malicious or anything, just because things were not necessarily as well structured as they are now.
It's just so that sort of line of conversation and inquiry is so fascinating to me, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, where you have like technically the cause of death is like diarrhea or like dehydration or like whatever causes of death you can have, or pneumonia or lots of other things, but you wouldn't have got those things had you not got the original virus. That's just another level of sort of clarity and of understanding of how we come to die from the introduction of these things. It's like the virus is this key that opens up all this other scattering things that happen to you and the way that your body fails. But the way we would colloquially talk about it is you die of the virus.
Yeah.
Well, the virus causes death.
You die of cancer, but do you die of cancer? Or do you die of complications due to cancer?
Like organ failure. Yeah.
Do you die of old age? What is old age? Like how does one die of old age? You're I guess, I mean, the way that you could, the way that you could die of old age and nothing else, I suppose, is just your body not working properly. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But even then, there would still be potentially a heart attack caused by something, or you know what I mean? The way we talk about things is, it's interesting because it really affects the way that we sort of conceptualize things. And that sounds like a really sort of basic thought, but I don't think we necessarily consider enough how much language affects our perception of the world. Mm. Because, I mean, even things like, even when it comes to things like, you know, the difference between sort of illnesses and symptoms, like how we think of diarrhea as an illness, like, oh, I've got diarrhea, but actually it's just a symptom, you know? In the same way that we think of the cold as, oh, it's caused by one thing. The cold is caused by a number of different viruses. Mm. And the flu is caused by a number of different flu viruses. We link the flu together because it's different strain. It's sort of similar strains of viruses. They're all from the same sort of family. But when it comes to the common cold, it's just a bunch of different viruses that cause the cold, that cause the same symptoms. It's just interesting that, especially when it comes to medicine, that we really, really are limited by the way that our language describes it.
My favorite example of that, which I always come back to, it always gets reminded of me in like daily life, is that we have in our English language, which doesn't occur in every language, we have a very accusational language. So the way that we say something like, if James were to knock a cup off of the table, we'd say, James broke a cup. Even though James, that's the same thing we'd say as if James deliberately broke a cup. And we don't specify, unless we deliberately make an effort to, we don't make a, like one thing other languages might say is the cup was broken.
The passive
cup got
voice.
Broken. Yeah, passive. And we don't have that. And it's not normal in our language to specify. It's not normal in our language to specify accidental things as separate to deliberate things.
It may not be science. I don't know. I don't care if it's science or not. I want to do an episode on linguistics and language, and like I want to do a whole series on it because
we've had people request that.
Yeah, so many people. Yeah. It's so interesting. Like how some languages, when you talk about colors, okay, this is what I think is really interesting. We sort of think of colors as being separate, you know, as very distinct things, when actually, not all that distinct. But even when you consider the fact that in the most basic languages, I think the only colors that they've got, like the most limited number of colors you can have, I think is red, blue, and maybe green. I'm not sure. Or red and blue. I think the least number of colors you can have is 3 in a language. Those are the least that we found. But you get additional colors in additional languages. So for example, not all languages have a word for pink. But when your language has a word for pink, which is just light red, you then visually separate pink from light pink in the same sense that you see blue and you think that's blue, but other languages have a distinct word for light blue. So they will see light blue and blue as different colors.
Yeah.
And some languages don't discern green from blue. They say those are the same color. So you'll say, oh, it's the sky is green and so is the sky is blue and so are the trees.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, you know? It's just really interesting to me that even something that seems as fundamental as color is fully influenced by the way that your language describes it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Just to clarify there, there are languages with 2 terms, which are just dark and bright. And languages that have 3 terms are black, white, and red.
There we go. Good. Thank you very
red
much.
Red, I guess, is important because it denotes danger in terms of like things that aren't edible and things that might be poisonous quite a lot.
And blood. Well, I mean,
but it makes you wonder if they actually live in a world like subjectively where they don't actually see. Like they don't see the same colors as we see them. They just see light, dark, and red.
Well, okay, think about it. I don't think you don't see the colors. It's more, okay. Do you know how there were sort of 2 distinct shades of sort of teal? You've got like the more sort of teal being a sort of greeny blue. So you've got kind of greeny blue and a sort of bluey green. And there's no distinct point where you can discern greeny blue from bluey green. But like when you compare them together, you're like, well, I guess that's greeny blue and that's bluey green.
Yeah.
but relative to each other.
Yeah, relative to, but we don't have a word for sort of greeny blue. So we don't just see that and think, oh, it's greeny blue. We just We just think that it's like, oh, that's blue.
Green or blue.
Or that's, green. In the same sense, if a language doesn't have a word for sort of blue, or they don't have a distinct word for blue or green, they won't see them as the same color. You can obviously discern that they are different shades, but you'd be like, oh, they're different shades of the same color. In the same way that we see blue and think light blue is baby blue, is just a different shade of blue than dark blue.
Yeah.
But we see pink and red and we're like, those are, that pink is not red. It is not. Despite the fact that pink is as red as light blue is blue.
Light red.
Light red.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was, whew, that was so much. That was a lot to wrap my head around. But no, it's interesting. If you, I would genuinely recommend looking into sort of how languages describe things, because it really affects, really affects a lot. Weird that we got onto that, talking about the Spanish flu. But actually, it's not that weird, because the Spanish flu, we describe it as the Spanish flu, despite the fact that it wasn't from Spain. So even these sort of... these sort of things in language, we can, you know, they affect medicine, pandemics, the way we view everything. The Spanish flu isn't the Spanish flu, and the coronavirus isn't the China virus.
No.
So, you know, I just think that's interesting. But what do you guys think? Let us know in the comments below. You thought I was talking to you, but I wasn't. Anything else you guys want to say?
Try not to get the Spanish flu if possible.
I mean, it'd be pretty difficult.
Yeah,
you'd have
or
to you'd
challenge. Have to, try and get it.
You'd have to go out. In fact, I 100% believe that it would be infinitely harder to get the Spanish flu than it would be to not get it. You'd really have to go out your way. You'd have to spend years working your way up to be like a fairly. Actually, would you have to spend that long? You just need to get yourself into a lab where you're able to work with the Spanish flu. Luke, what do you want people to do?
I want them to, once they've got the Spanish flu, I want them to snot in a filter and feed that to a rabbit.
Well, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey Everywhere.
I'm Champkin Everywhere.
I'm Luke Upworth Everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.